This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Makes me feel like
I did.
Not bad, huh?
Yeah, that's nice of him.
Yeah, I know, I encourage it.
Did he owe you?
I begged him. I just come and cry on his porch every morning. Like, please write me something. No, but I certainly enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's kind of based on something from, like, what, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
That Shorty did?
Melissa was in Go, which was my first movie, and she had a small role, and she just kicked ass in it. And I wrote a short film starring her. I didn't know her. I was just like, I really like that actress. Oh, my God, I'll film for her. And she was great in that, and that ended up getting her busy with doing a lot of other stuff, but she was also in both Charlie's Angels and...
D.C.
In D.C., my TV show. And so when it came time to start writing this, I knew I wanted her in it, so I talked to her about it before I put pen to paper, because I wouldn't do it if she wouldn't do it.
So you knew what the movie was about beforehand,
then? Not really. I mean, he basically just gave a really rough outline of it. I think you just said, at least for my character, he was going to take the character that we'd done in the short, and he's like, and he just wanted to kind of play with where she is 10 years later. I mean, I think it changed quite a bit from that simple kind of statement.
So
but
what was your reaction then when you read the script?
When I read it, initially to reread it immediately, because I liked it so much, and I kind of had the same feeling, I think, when people see it, it's like you want to see it again right away and kind of like watch for, like, what did you miss the first time around? And I just loved it. I thought, for the love of God, I get to play three different characters, and it's really good. It's probably the best thing I've ever read, for sure. So there weren't a lot of drawbacks.
I heard you use the short film as your basic demo reel.
I did.
A long time.
Yeah, I really did. Well, it was just, I liked it. It was more interesting. I liked everything about it better than a lot of things I'd done. So I was like, why not?
So let's talk about you as a director. Mm-hmm. What's different about him when he's behind the camera and compared to when he's just writing?
I mean, so obviously, much more input. I mean, I found it easier, I think, especially for things like this. It's like, I can't imagine anyone else directing it. You know, it's like, it's out of his mind. It's such kind of a wild ride in terms of keeping... I mean, it's a simple three simple stories that make one bigger story, but I can't imagine someone else trying to explain that to you. Like, I feel like the wheels would have kind of come off the track if someone else was then having to interpret what John meant. It's like, John's very specific and very clear, so he made something that could have been maybe a little, like, confusing. Like, no, it's this. This part leads to this, and, it, you know, he kind of simplified it all down.
I was going to ask, when you tell your friends about the film, in my opinion, it's very hard to talk about.
Yeah.
What do you tell your friends when you want to sum up the movie?
I usually say it's three short films that all star the same three actors playing different roles, and it's only as you sort of go through the movie that you realize that they're actually not separate movies, that really are. There's something bigger going on. It's challenging that it's like, you know, it's a comedy, but it's also scary, and it's a drama, and... it does a lot of things. It does a lot more kinds of different things than a movie would usually try to do. So that's challenging. But I avoid copying out with this whole sort of, oh, you can't describe it. Because it's like, well, you can describe anything. I mean, a writer's job is to describe things.
Just
so
hard,
I try to find.
Hard but, to put into a log line.
It's a hard log line. And that's honestly why it couldn't be a studio movie. Because they need to be able to say, like, it's Spider-Man. And they need to be able to say, like, this is what it is. And there's not a one thing that you can kind of grab onto for the movie.
How did you prepare this is a two-part question. How did you prepare to do, like, three different roles in one movie? And as an actress, how do you make sure you distinguish between those three different characters? Is that hard?
It's like, first I had to calm down from, like, my initial thing, which was to make them incredibly different. Like, you know, you go a little nuts with, like, oh, this one can be... you know, this one will have an accent and a limp, and this one, like, you go, like, actor school crazy, because it's such a fun thing to be able to do. So, of course, your mind goes to, like, what are the opposites? Like, how different can I make them? And then it's like, well, that's not what it's about. It's not about, like, look what I can do. It's about serving the story. So, one, it was calming down, having John tell me, no wigs. Which I was like, what? And then to prepare for it, it's like, I think how he how John shot it helped tremendously. We shot each one kind of as its separate entity. So there was no crossover, which would have just been, one, physically impossible, because we all, you know, just hair and hair changes wouldn't have been possible. But, you know, it's, he helped keep them very separate little movies. So when one ended, it was completely done, and we moved on. And the next day, it's like you were a different person. You started a different thing. And so it helped the focus stay. Is that mine? Really? Am I that girl? I have it on that's the silence for the phone. Wow. If anyone can figure that out, I can't tell. Should I just burn my bag? So that's it. I think it was just realizing that, yes, there are three different characters, but there's also a real specific through line, and there's a reason that she's always there, and it's that she's not a completely different person. And then his style of shooting helped, I think, keep them different, but not, you know, wacky different.
And for John, why did you decide to shoot it that way? Is it because you thought it would be easier?
Yeah, I mean, each story really demanded its own approach and, you know, its own way. It's really its own style of acting, its own style of shooting it. And logistically, it would have just been impossible to try to be doing two different things in one day. We used different crews largely for the different sections. I mean, when we got down to the last thing we shot was the documentary, the part two, and we shot it like a documentary. We were, you know, one or two cameras, video, completely different crew, you know, one sound guy. Like, we didn't look like a movie. We looked like just yet another reality TV show shooting in Los Angeles. And that was a tremendous liberty because we could shoot in real places without permits, and people wouldn't bother us because we just looked. Our footprint was so small, people wouldn't pay attention to us. Going off what she said, though, you know, it was important to me that the actor prepare each character for who that character was and not try to react to things, not try to keep the characters separate in their heads or try to keep them away from each other. You know, the characters aren't aware of who they were in the previous section or the next section. They just need to be true to that story and simple.
Did you have any experience playing, like, Second Life or games like that?
I hadn't really played Second Life. I played way too much World of Warcraft, and so the conversation that happens in Part 3 is really my World of Warcraft, which was I was the orc boyfriend who just played just entirely too much. And it's what's so tough about those games is they reward you for doing incredibly simple things. So, like, in real life, I wouldn't want to go out and pick leaves. But in there, like, you know, you can get a level by picking enough leaves. And then you trade them, and then you can get this better sword, and then you can do this. And you never question, like, well, why am I doing this? Just because, like, there's just this constant reward system. And writing is so hard and so unrewarding so much of the time. And that was so easy, and it was so simple and straightforward that I ended up wasting entirely too much time playing that.
Did you see the South Park episode?
I did. The South Park episode is genius. It's incredibly accurate to sort of what that experience was, and that, like, I would find myself getting so emotionally frustrated by, like, what was clearly like a 13-year-old kid in Dubuque, honestly, the reason why I wish it was some sort of great altruistic reason, like, well, I realized I need to put my family first, I need to put my writing first. It was because I had this. I was in a dungeon instance with some party that I just met, and they accused me of something, of doing this horrible thing and, like, and poaching this one sword. I'm like, I didn't do it. And I was so angry. I'm like, oh, I hate these people. And I stopped. I took it off my computer. But I mean, that was the, you know, it does feel really real to me. And so even online, I saw the new expansion pack, and so they had a video of it. I'm like, and I'm just totally like that crack guy who's like seeing, like, you know, the guy shooting up the corner. I'm like, oh, it's tough.
I was actually going to, venturing from video games for a second, can you talk about your writing process, actually? Are you a 9-to-5 person? Are you late at night? Are you structured? For people who want to write, I mean, what do you do?
I end up keeping, like, 9-to-5 office hours. My life is still, though, like, midterms in college where, like, sometimes I will have to pull all-nighters to finish something up, and that's just the nature of being a writer. And, you know, I can beat myself up for being lazy or for being unproductive, but that's just my process. So sometimes I am sort of the up-all-night writer guy. Increasingly I am, you know, because I have a family, like, I'm responsible for them too, and so I can't I'm not allowed to sort of be exhausted all day, and so I do have to sort of keep more usual hours.
Do you think that there's like a lot of writers I've spoken with think that there's a, like, you have a limited window each day that you're really creative, mm-hmm. whether it be 2 hours or 5 hours for some people, or 10 hours?
Yeah.
Do you believe that?
I think that is true. Sometimes you don't know when that those productive hours are going to be, but it's hopefully you're using those productive hours to actually do productive work and not to play, you know, Warcraft, and that's the challenge. So, like,
for instance,
but I'm glad that I'm spending my productive hours now in this round table with you.
I just want to ask my follow-up. When you write, how do you prioritize your what you're doing? Is it based on whatever muse strikes you that day, or do you go, well, I have to write Shazam, and I have to do, like, 3 scenes today of this, and 3 scenes of this one, if I want to make my deadline?
I tend to only work on one project at a time, because it would be nice to have the luxury of, like, I don't feel like writing Shazam today. I tend to have to write on the thing I'm writing on. But I will write out of sequence. So if, like, I really just don't feel like writing that action sequence, I'll go ahead and do, like, that funnier moment that's happening at the end of the second act, and I know I'll get back to the action sequence when I need to. So I feel free to skip around. That's a luxury of being a writer.
You've talked about how in the second short in particular that Ryan is, like, a stand-in for mm-hmm. you. I'm wondering if you could both talk about, was there a moment when you were directing or when you were acting opposite Ryan where there was an uncanny moment where he was so much like John or so different from John that it was a little weird? Or,
well, I think his just his, you know, he definitely changed his speech pattern, and John's got a quick pacing to him. So there was something very kind of funny that would happen when I'd be, like, working with Ryan, and then notes would come in from John, and every once in a while it was a little like, okay, there's kind of two Johns, so to speak, because Ryan was now rapid fire at me, and then John speaks very quickly. So that kind of overlap, but it was always, I don't know, there was always kind of an otherworldly sense about that whole second part, because we were bringing in, you know, I'm playing myself, we're talking about personal things from my life, we have, you know, things that have happened between John and I. Here's Ryan playing John, who's standing over there. Like, it really was kind of like, what's going on? Even though it was very clear.
And
I'm
the off-screen producer who's asking questions. So, like, you hear my voice in that section.
Yeah.
Redirecting stuff in cases. So I was constantly trying to sort of smudge the line between, like, what's real and what's fiction throughout that section.
So what's it like to have yourself played by Ryan?
It was fine. I mean, he, you know, just like Melissa was playing a version of herself who's named Melissa McCarthy, he's playing a version of me named Gavin Taylor. And, you know, if I was going to ask him to do that, I had to give him permission to take anything he wanted to take. And so he took a lot of my mannerisms that annoy me to death when I see myself doing them. But it was accurate. And so I'm not, you know, I wasn't afraid of that. It's honestly my favorite section of the movie, in that when you're writing, you create a character, and then you just hand it off to the actor, and, like, you don't sort of get to change it around again. And in doing that section, there could be things that would come up, or, like, I'd hear him talking about something. A lot of that section is improvised. I'd hear him talking about things, and I'm like, oh, I remember this thing. And so we just sort of discuss it, and then he would sort of echo back what I was saying. And to be able to do that in real time was a unique opportunity.
I'm going to have to open the door on Shazam a little bit more. Obviously, there's a lot of people out there who are curious, are going to be your take on it. Could you talk about mm-hmm. the writing of it, what's going on, the status, and also, are you writing it with any sort of budget in mind?
Yeah. Last question is easy. It's like, I'm writing it for the budget that's capable of making it, which is probably a pretty substantial budget, because it's a big superhero movie and those aren't cheap. So I don't know what the budget's going to be, but it's ample. To me, what was so appealing about Shazam as a movie is that it's a superhero movie where the characters in it would actually read the comic books that they're based on. And it had that ability to be meta without being incredibly annoyingly knowing. Like, you know, these are characters who are not only excited to be superheroes, but sort of really understand the rules of being a superhero, and they take the responsibility of being a superhero a little differently than other people would. And it's actually just a movie that's inherently funny. Like, the underlying premise is funny. So it's not just Spider-Man plus jokes. There's something inherently funny about a 13-year-old boy who gets to become, you know, a big, studly superhero and sort of what's a priority to him wouldn't be a priority to a normal person who gets those powers.
And are you already trying, I guess the challenge is for a film like this, with he has amazing powers.
Yeah.
Have you already, how is it coming up with these crazy big action sequences?
Yeah, I've written a lot of set pieces, and they're I really enjoy them, because I'm the kind of person, if I'm sitting around waiting for a meeting to start, I'll always be like, where could I land a helicopter? And that's just that's sort of the daydreaming that a screenwriter gets to do, is thinking about, like, what's actually almost impossible but kind of believable in a movie. And so with Shazam, it's been exciting to figure out, like, how does flying work? And sort of like, how, if you're suddenly able to fly, how would you describe what that's like to another character? And so figuring that out was really interesting. The basis of Shazam's powers are different than Superman's. They're not based on the red sun. They're magical, and or the yellow sun, and they're magical, and like that's a unique opportunity. And yeah, let's talk about that.
Is this more of like a kids movie, would you say, like PG?
I don't know what it'll ultimately be. It's not rated R.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I think it's the kids, you know, the 13-year-olds who are reflected in the movie. Will really love the movie, and I think other people will too. I mean, it's got to be, at this budget level, it has to be sort of one of those classic four quadrants where everybody and their brother goes to see it.
Which incarnation of Shazam are you basing it on? Is it today's version versus the 70s? Or?
It's... I think it takes a fair amount from what of the current mythology and a lot of sort of the classic mythology in terms of that wish fulfillment of you know, just like you say, like Spider-Man doesn't. It's hard to say what decade Spider-Man takes place in. It's like it's sort of like a perfect utopian kind of like this is what a big city looks like. Our story has all the classic qualities, but is also set in the modern age, and that like kids can't have cell phones. So it's you know, there's been a lot of questions about sort of like, you know, oh, is he really Billy Batson when he converts, or is he really Shazam? And it's like. That I really can't kind of get into.
And also, can you talk a little bit about John Hancock before you go? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hancock is a movie that used to be called Tonight He Comes. I came on to do a couple weeks of work shortly before they went into production. And, you know, it was just an amazing script. And I passed on it like four times because, like, I can't. This is great. And I can't. Okay, there's maybe a few little things we could work on. It's like, oh, we'll just work on a few little things. And so I just stayed on for a couple weeks and helped out. But it's not my movie at all.
Not much is known about it. Can you tell us a little bit about the
You know, honestly, it's not The Sixth Sense, but there's a big secret that's sort of at the heart of it, and I don't want to ruin it for people. But it's a revisionist superhero movie in the way that Shazam is a revisionist superhero movie, but just 180 degrees different.
And for both of you, since I know you guys got to get going, could you talk about other things you might be working on in the future? And have you thought about what's coming up after Shazam?
Yeah, we've already started shooting a new show, Samantha Who, for ABC. So that's been really fun. It's a nice change from Gilmore, and I think it's really fun. It's really funny and smart. Don Todd's the writer, and it's been kind of great doing something new, but still, like, I like TV. I like going in, and I like working a lot, so... makes it possible to go in every week and work, so that's pretty fun. And there's two movies coming out that I'm not sure when they're being released, but one part or what's it called now, Just Add Water, and then another one's Pretty Ugly People. So
nice.
I know, I love that title. So those will be fun. So I should have a fun year coming up.
Yeah. And after Shazam, I signed a deal at Fox, owing them my next original script, so I'll be writing that for Fox. Which will be a movie I'm pretty soon.
When are you going to direct?
Yeah,
that's what I say.
I would love to direct again. And honestly, I'm kind of stacked up for a while, but I do intend to direct again. And
would you direct someone else's script? Or?
No, I wouldn't. No. And people ask me that a lot. And it takes so long to direct that I just can't imagine spending, you know, 2 years of my life doing something that wasn't, like, that I just didn't have to direct, and this was a movie I had to direct, and so I can't imagine doing someone else's script at this point. Ask me again in 6 months.
With your original script, have you thought about a genre that you want to tackle?
Yeah, a couple different genres, and so I think, you know, the movie I write for Fox is going to be one of those big movies, and there's nothing wrong with a big movie, but I don't know if it's going to be a thriller, if it's going to be an action movie, or if it's going to be a Bring the Kids movie yet.
And you guys, I believe you both went to Sundance.
We did,
yeah. We did.
I think you might have to get going, but could you talk about your experiences a little bit, about being at the festival and what that was like?
Well, I was 5 months pregnant, so I was just kind of concentrating on getting up those hills.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of like, oh God, why can't these all be in the same place? But I really loved it. I didn't get to see any movie, so I had a very strange on Sundance-like experience, because basically when we got done with press, I took me and my belly home and passed out. So that was, yeah, did you see anything?
I saw nothing.
I didn't see anything.
I skied, I did press, and enjoyed myself, but it was just weird. Because my very first movie, Go, premiered at Sundance, and that was comparatively big to what we were, and so there's a lot more happening for that, but it was still a great experience.
It's supposed to be the best time to ski.
It was actually great, because no one would ski, so we were the only people on slopes. That was nice. Thank you guys very much.
Where did the line in the nines about koalas come from?
Oh, I've always had a secret... there's something going on with koalas. There's just no way that they're thinking about something while they're doing all that stuff. And so I just thought it was too boastful to sort of say that, humans were just one step away from the creators of this universe. So I thought they were good in between. Dolphins, they get way too much credit. Dogs get too much credit. So koalas, I think, are where they're at.
What was your casting process like for this film?
We never had a casting director. There were so few roles that we just made direct offers to the people who we really wanted in the movie. So Melissa, I called up. Ryan, we just had a really short list, and I said, I would like to meet with him. And we met, and he was great, and he wanted to do it. And Hope, it was just a hard time finding the right actress who would fit all three roles. And we just finally made a direct offer to her agent, and she said yes. It was tough because she lives in New York, so getting her to come out for the schedule was rough, but it was great. Then people like David Denman, I knew from Big Fish. Octavia, I knew through Melissa. And there's people who I always kind of wanted to work with.
Did you pick Ryan because you guys had a similar physique?
Yeah, I mean, it was really, I saw him as, when I look in the mirror, I'm hugely delusional. And, and so I was like, yeah, that's me. That's me. Cool.